everybody. This is Tom Capone, Executive Director of the NYDLA, for another session of Coffee in the Clouds. Today we have Thomas Koch. Thomas Koch is the CEO and founder of Campus Starter. And Campus Starter is a rewards model crowdfunding portal that supports projects started by student entrepreneurs at the college level. I will have Tom tell us all about College Starter in a second, but my question right now for you, Tom, and welcome to our podcast.
Definitely. Excited to be here.
Great. For those that don't know, Tom, what exactly is crowdfunding?
I think the best way to describe crowdfunding is it's similar to the old Amish barn raising. It's where a bunch of people get together. They start off, each person brings a small amount of money, and all those people get together, pool that money into one larger sum of money so that a larger scale project can be accomplished. The funding for a larger scale project can be accomplished. So basically a lot of people, small amounts of money, combine that into one really large sum of money.
Oh, okay. Now, it seems to be really hot in the news right now. There's a lot of press, I think, legislation, et cetera. What exactly happened recently? I just saw a lot of things come across the wire, both on a national level. Also, I live here in New Jersey. I saw things on the local level, too. What exactly has happened with crowdfunding?
Sure. The biggest piece of news was on the federal level. Back in 2012, there was this law passed called the Jobs Act. And the Jobs Act really dealt with crowdfunding as a tool for investing in startup companies and investing in entrepreneurs. And one of the titles of that act was Title III, which was sort of retail crowdfunding, meaning in the past, if you were trying to get private investors, you were limited to accredited investors, which is a very small segment of the population of people who have made $200,000 a year or more for the last 2 years or have a net worth of over $1 million. It's something like 4 to 7% of the population, depending on who you ask. Title III opened that up to everybody. So whether they were an accredited investor or not, you could take investment from them. And they had 180 days originally to create the rules and get them passed. Obviously, we're about 3.5 years past that. So it's kind of a super delayed thing. But they finally got the rules out, and the rules are going to go live in January, meaning that anybody off the street who wants to invest in a startup company can invest in a startup company. And for these entrepreneurs, they can raise up to $1 million. So that going live is a fantastic piece of news for entrepreneurs all over the country, for investors who have felt they've been left out of this ability to invest in the hot startup and, you know, make their millions down the road. It's a great way to get involved in that market. On the state level in New Jersey is a state, many other states have already passed laws, but New Jersey is the most recent state. They had a crowdfunding law on the state level, which pertains to New Jersey's entrepreneurs taking investment from New Jersey residents only. And the law was passed a while ago, but Governor Christie finally got around to passing it or signing the law. So it's been passed. Now he's signed it. It's enacted. And so New Jersey entrepreneurs can participate in what we call intrastate crowdfunding. So it's a very exciting time for people who are entrepreneurs, but also people who are interested in investing in startups who might not be accredited investors but might be pretty sophisticated.
So, go New Jersey.
Right.
Well, are there different types of crowdfunding?
Yeah, definitely. I think I could distill it down probably to six different types, but I'm going to go through the big ones that people think about are donation crowdfunding, which is exactly what it sounds like. You're going to a platform somewhere and you're making a donation. You see this a lot with Catholic schools or Christian schools. You see it with, you know, people on GoFundMe who are trying to raise money for treatment of a medical condition or something like that, where they're actually just taking a donation. Nobody expects a return of any kind. The next level is sort of what we see on Kickstarter, and this is what we're doing at Campus Starter. We call it the rewards or pre-sales model. And the idea there is you're not expecting a financial return, but you're going to give somebody money, and you're going to get something back, probably a product or a T-shirt or I just contributed to a friend of mine. She has a campaign, and she's going out and touring the country, interviewing people in the silent generation, which are sort of the generation just older than baby boomers, about how technology has affected their lives. For $20, she's going to send me a postcard and a nice little letter updating where she is on one leg of this particular journey. So I'm not getting anything financial back, but I'm getting something. You're starting to see a lot of companies distribute product this way. I've got this really cool product. I need to sell 1,000 of them. or place an order for 1,000 with a manufacturer. So I'm going to go online, I'm going to pre-sell 1,000 of these, go to my manufacturer and say, okay, tool the machine, build this for me, and send it out. And let's say your product costs $16. When you crowdfund and pre-sell, you'll sell it for like $25 or something like that. So not only are you fulfilling the order, but you also have a little bit of money left over to help your business move on going forward. And you've validated your product. The next type, what's going on in New Jersey, is what we call intrastate crowdfunding. Intrastate crowdfunding is, it never leaves your state. So a business in New Jersey that wants to take advantage of this would be a New Jersey registered business, not a Delaware C Corp or, you know, a Nevada corporation or anything like that. They have to be a New Jersey organized company, and they can only take investment from the residents of New Jersey. So it's a great law for very local businesses. I helped write the bill in Michigan and worked very hard on the bill in a couple of other states in the Midwest. We've mostly seen it in things like microbreweries. There have been a couple good examples in Michigan. Or it's a localized business where you want to take on investors, investors want to be involved, and you can't really do a reward with the product. You can't ship somebody a six-pack of beer. You have to, you know, take a little bit of financial return for them, and they can come in and drink the beer once the brewery gets built. Then you move into what we call accredited investor crowdfunding. It's basically deal syndication online, very similar to angel investing. It's accredited investors only. They're investing in, it's just like a traditional angel deal, a typical, let's say, $250,000 deal for a new hot tech startup. But again, it's very limited. You can now solicit to those investors, so the rules have changed a little bit, and that was also part of the Jobs Act. Lastly, with the new law change, the most recent kind is the sort of Title III crowdfunding, where you're able to get, you can't really solicit generally. You have to follow certain advertising rules that are very detailed, and you should definitely talk to an attorney before you do it, but you can now access all the investors in the country that you want to, and it really opens up the market for the number of investors that you can reach. And so those are really the five biggest. The sixth one is what we call Reg A Plus. It's sort of a, I don't know how much it affects startup companies. You can raise up to $50 million. It's really a mini public offering. I see it more being something that'll be used by later stage companies, maybe replacing a Series A round or a company that's in a growth stage. They've been around for 15 years, but they need to go from the old style of manufacturing to digital manufacturing and expand. And they're going to go reach out to as many people as they can, trying to get them to buy into their offerings so they can raise that capital.
Now, I know that you're an attorney, and I also know that you're an entrepreneur many times over. How did you get involved in crowdfunding?
It's a great question. So I used to be a securities regulator in the state of Michigan. And, in fact, officially I'd come from a small startup company and gone into that position. The startup was sort of downsizing, and which tends to happen sometimes with companies. They don't go the way you want them to go. And about a week into my job as a securities regulator, the Jobs Act was passed. And I very quickly saw this as a tool that really could benefit Michigan. Michigan, this was right around the time when Michigan's economy, I think it hit its nadir and had bottomed out, and we needed new companies, we needed new blood to rebuild the economy in our state. So I was very excited about crowdfunding and learned as much as I could about the entire crowdfunding market. I stayed on with the state of Michigan for about a year, and then an entrepreneur who also happened to be a friend of mine hired me into his company, and it was a payments company, and he was very interested in the way money moves and the way money flows, and he was also a serial entrepreneur. And he said, I'm hiring you, and I'm going to pay you to go around and evangelize on crowdfunding, learn as much as you can, get to know everybody in the industry. And so I spent a good year, year and a half with him. I did other things for his startup as well, but really speaking across the country, meeting everyone involved in the industry, getting to know as many people as I could, as much as I could about crowdfunding. Like I said, helped write the law in Michigan, worked on the laws in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and a couple other places. After that, as that company, it was actually acquired, and when the acquisition happened, I moved over to a company called Crowdfund Connect, who was one of the premier builders of crowdfunding sites. We build accredited investor crowdfunding sites, and was working in depth as a compliance director and also someone who was building crowdfunding sites. And so that, my boss there was a very, very good boss, in that he encouraged me to chase my dreams and said, hey, you have this idea about college crowdfunding. I support you fully. What can I do to help you? And now I've gone off and taken a sabbatical from him to enter an accelerator and run my own crowdfunding company.
Wow. Wow. So from your experience, what would be an example of a successful use of crowdfunding at the state level? And What about an example of someone not reaching their goal, but you know, still being successful? I mean, what kind of examples could you give us?
Well, you know, you didn't mention that I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which has had two nicknames in its history. One is the Furniture City, because we make a lot of office furniture, but now we're known as Beer City, USA. And we're known as Beer City because Michigan, and Grand Rapids specifically, is home to so many microbreweries at this point that it's almost like a new one opens up every week. And crowdfunding has been very successful for those companies. The first success using the state of Michigan's crowdfunding bill was a brewery called Tecumseh Brewing Company. And for people who don't know Michigan, Tecumseh is pretty much right on the border of Michigan and Ohio. Not very far. It's sort of between Ann Arbor and Toledo, but then a little bit closer to Lake Erie. And they were the first company to try to crowdfund. They were extremely successful. They raised about $150,000 through crowdfunding and used that successful campaign to then secure a bank loan with a small local state bank called Onsted State Bank. The brewery is still up and running. They've been featured in the New York Times. They've been featured in the Washington Post. They've gotten all kinds of press. They're fantastic guys. It's a great little brewery. A lot of people I know have gone down there and tried their beer. Sadly, I haven't. That's completely on the other side of the state for me, so I haven't tried their beer. I counteract that with a story. I think it was still a successful campaign, but they didn't reach their goal via crowdfunding. It was a little closer to my hometown. There's a town called Newaygo. Newaygo is about 45 minutes north of Grand Rapids. It's a small town right on the river, on these beautiful bluffs overlooking the Grand River. And it's a hot spot for fly fishermen, and a lot of tourism goes on up there, hunting, fishing, that kind of stuff. And these guys from the town, local kids, started up a brewery. They've been home brewers, and they started the Newaygo Brewing Company. They went out on crowdfunding, and actually where their success came wasn't through crowdfunding, but as their story got out and word got out and people started to see what they were doing, a group of angel investors came in and said, hey, take down your crowdfunding offering. That's not a good idea. I'm actually going to help you out, and we're going to give you a private investment. And so they returned any pledges they had already received back to the original donors and wound up taking on angel investment. So they're still in business, and they're successful, but they didn't necessarily do it via crowdfunding. But use crowdfunding as a marketing tool and as a way to attract investors. So it was a kind of a cool story about how their word would never have gotten out if they hadn't done a crowdfunding campaign.
Wow. Wow. So what would be an example of a innovative or interesting non-traditional use of crowdfunding?
Well, interestingly enough, Crowdfund Connect, the company I worked for, we are the owners and operator of a site called CannaFunder. And CannaFunder is in the sort of the cannabis business. So medical marijuana projects, recreational marijuana projects, it's one of those markets that's just exploding from an investment standpoint. And so Randy, my CEO, went out and built this site, and we've launched it. It's been around for a little bit more than a year, and we've seen a lot of activity. And it's been interesting. It's an interesting ride to see. That's not my cup of tea, that industry, but I've met a lot of fantastic folks through it who are well-known angel investors in some cases, guys who are big-time, you know, hedge fund managers, running family offices, things like that, getting involved in investing. And it's a good example of crowdfunding being used to fund these niche industries that maybe it would be really hard for a traditional investor to access, but because it's done online, there's some anonymity to it, you can do things that are a little bit outside the norm. And you can also, like let's say in the state of Michigan, there are 10 angel investors out of the 100 or so that are interested in cannabis. They can now go do that with the guys from Iowa or the guys from Washington or Colorado. They can syndicate deals across the country and participate in a much better way, and crowdfunding facilitates that. That's the great thing about crowdfunding. So CannaFunder is one that I've always found, I've gotten a kick out of it. And usually when I tell people about it, they get a kick out of it.
Wow. Now, because of the NYDLA, we have about, 46% of the colleges and universities in the USA are in our community. It seems like every college, every university these days seems to have an entrepreneur incubator or a center for entrepreneurs, et cetera. It's the thing on college campuses right now. How is crowdfunding affecting, you know, startups or entrepreneurs or, you know, the young entrepreneurs that are actually majoring in entrepreneurship while they're in college?
You know, I'm going to start off with just a little story. Locally here, we have a university called Grand Valley State. Grand Valley State is probably most known nationally for its football program. They've won a host of national championships, but it's a relatively urban university in the heart of Grand Rapids. and they have a phenomenal entrepreneurship support system, some great professors. They've got some great supporters of their system. But if you were to go to their CEO group, which is the College Entrepreneurs Organization on campus, the number one thing that that group discusses is, hey, I've got this great business idea. I think it's a winner, but I don't know how to get it funded. This is a game changer for people like that. And you hit it on the head when you said that colleges are sort of turning their attention to these entrepreneurial endeavors, and they're starting to add majors and minors and put up special wings of campus and, you know, on-campus incubators and things. But one of the big issues is, how do we fund all these businesses? And how do we harness the fact that we as a university have a great little tribe built up of alumni, people who support us, current students, former students, you know, parents of current students, and, you know, how do we harness that and get them involved with helping these students move forward? And at the same time, we're in a sort of an unprecedented era where you graduate from college. In the old days, there you sort of, if I did things the right way, I went to high school, got good grades, got into the right college and graduated, I'd get a good job, eventually I'd get married and have a house, a perfect life. Well, that's not so true anymore. Kids are graduating now to a job market where it's really tough, it's very competitive. And one of the things that gets lost in this is that many people, baby boomers in particular, are a great example of this. The baby boomer generation is full of entrepreneurs. They left school, they started businesses, and that's how they built their success. That's the American dream. So giving those young students an opportunity to start their own companies, it helps the economy. It makes sure that they're employed. It makes their parents happy because their kids aren't living in the basement anymore. And it's creating these new jobs. It's creating economic growth. And it's getting places, you know, you take a look at the Detroit area, that something needs to happen in Detroit. They need young people to stay. They need young people to start businesses and rebuild the economy because it's gone away. So crowdfunding helps that by funding the businesses. Instead of just having an idea that ends at the, you know, semester ends and the great idea I had goes away and I move on to my next class, they actually will go out and turn a real business up and become entrepreneurs and run businesses. And by the way, when somebody's an entrepreneur, even if they fail, the skill set that they learn, you know, if you're somebody that's running a company, you're learning marketing skills, you're learning sales skills, you might be learning some operations, you might be learning a little bit about finance. So if you're an engineering student who comes up with a product and all of a sudden you're running a business, even if it failed, you're going to be a much better employee for somebody down the road and probably a better entrepreneur down the road because of all the things that you learn in a very hands-on way. And when you're 22 and you're applying for jobs, that's the number one question. What experience do you have? Well, here's my experience. I started and ran a company. Oh, boy, that's phenomenal. You're much more valuable to me than if you were just somebody who had a degree and had, you know, spent their time doing internships.
Wow. Now, through the NYDLA, you know, some of the larger banks in the country are sponsors, like Wells Fargo Bank and Santander. Obviously, they love our deep relationship with all the colleges and universities. How are the banks and traditional financial institutions, I guess, how are even investors responding to crowdfunding?
You know, it's been a very mixed bag. Having come from the payments industry with my previous employer, a company called Verify Valid, we were selling directly to banks. We were working directly with banks. And as a result of that, I saw banks respond to crowdfunding. And there were generally different levels. You know, you take a Wells Fargo or a Chase or a big national bank, and crowdfunding was probably completely off their radar, something that they almost ignored. But a smaller bank, in particular the small community bank, are saying, hey, this is great for us. The capital requirements are such that we can't lend to a lot of people, and our bread and butter are these community businesses. Now we can step in and maybe get some revenue by, you know, charging them for an escrow account or coming in and saying, hey, we can't lend to you because you're a high-risk company, but if you raise $150,000, then we can lend to you because you've got some money on hand. That was what Tecumseh Brewing did. So it's great for banks, especially the community banks, to be a better asset to their community, and they can do that in a variety of ways. Escrow accounts is probably the most of the state laws in particular and some of the federal laws as well require you to escrow the funds somewhere. And that's a great way for a bank to be involved, charge a little bit of a fee to administer that and help people out. And then, of course, they can get business loans. And what we found with the escrow accounts is that people would say, okay, escrow it here at this bank, and guess what? When that business is successful, where are they going to do their business banking? Probably at that bank, so they can gain customers long term. Then there's the, you know, the traditional finance houses and the traditional ways that deals have been done. I have a lot of friends who are angel investors, and one of the things they're seeing with crowdfunding is every now and then they see a deal that's a really good company, but for whatever reason, there's not consensus within their angel group. And so the company's trying to raise $300,000. And within the angel group, they can get enough guys to pony up and get them to about $200,000, but there's $100,000 left. Crowdfunding is a great tool for them to sort of syndicate the back end of a deal, bring somebody else in. It's a great way for them to meet other angel groups. I've connected angel groups in Michigan with groups in Arizona. I've connected the guy in Arizona with a group in Illinois and a group in Virginia. So you start seeing these synergies where groups that are very regional but see companies that aren't necessarily so regional, because it's a tech company that's going to have customers all over the country, they can syndicate a deal with anybody. And the angels grow, they get better relationships, they grow their network, they can do better deals, they can do more deals. So it's very good for them. Obviously, for investors, it's just another way to invest. One of the funny things about accredited investors, I use my dad as an example. He's an executive at Oracle, and he's kind of on his retirement track right now. He's getting ready to retire, and he's very much an accredited investor. But he's been busy. I mean, when he was working full-time at Oracle, there wasn't time for him to go look out at angel investments. And he's certainly not going to join an angel group. He doesn't want to pay a membership fee. He doesn't want to go put on a blue blazer and go to a dinner. But he would love to invest in some startup companies, especially ones that, you know, he's in e-commerce and he sees an exciting e-commerce company. So for a guy like him who's never going to join an angel group, it's a great way for him to still invest with another group of people. And it might be guys he knows, it might be guys he doesn't know that they meet on angellist.com or some other crowdfunding platform. They're able to get together, invest in companies, maybe even lend experience and expertise to those companies that they've invested in, which is what a lot of angel groups do. But he doesn't have to go through the old, I'm going to join an angel group, sit in a room, have companies pitch to me. He can go out and find them and be a little bit of an attack dog, do the due diligence he wants to do the way he wants to do it. So it's great. It's moving the ball forward for a lot of people in the way they think about how startup investing is done.
Wow. So, man, my brain's going 90 miles an hour right now. As an entrepreneur, I'm thinking, you know, where was this? Where was this 30 years ago? Other markets, you know, what other markets can benefit from crowdfunding? What about all the incubators that are out there, the co-working spaces, incubators, et cetera? How is crowdfunding going to affect them?
You know, that's really one of the things that's always stunned me is I'm attacking these college students. I shouldn't say attacking, but I'm going after that market. I think there's another big market, which is the entrepreneurs that aren't in a college entrepreneurship program. They're maybe, I'm 36 years old. There's a lot of guys my age who have a business idea or maybe have a product, and they need a way to fund that. And I go to funding pitch events all the time, and I go to these events where companies are trying to raise money, and it's difficult. So crowdfunding would be a great way. If I was an incubator, I would partner up with a crowdfunding platform or getting involved with the crowdfunding platform so that when a company comes into my office and they're incubating there and they're using the services I provide, and it's incubator, I'm in an accelerator program right now. And I sit around looking at the other companies in the accelerator, and I think some of these are going to go out to an angel group. They're going to get angel funding. Some of them might not. And the ones that don't, are they just going to simply at the end of the accelerator go out of business, or how are they going to find funding to keep themselves going forward, especially if they're not to a point where they're revenue positive? Crowdfunding is a great way to do that because they can go find people who like what they're doing, who like their product. They don't have to go through this, I have to pitch to 100 angel groups routine, and some of them aren't angel group ready. You know, there's a lot of businesses that are lifestyle businesses, smaller businesses that aren't going to be right for venture money like that or angel money like that, who can go to other avenues such as crowdfunding and get funded, and people can find a great return there. People can benefit from being involved with those companies. So it's really, it's almost unlimited. The other big thing I've seen is, particularly with minority-owned and women-owned businesses, in my spare time, I advise a lot of companies, and I find myself working with a lot of minority-owned businesses, and it's really interesting. I don't think that this is universal by any means, but I've seen minority-owned businesses that were very, very fantastic companies struggle to find funding, and part of that is, you know, there's still probably a little bit of a struggle in this country with race relations. On crowdfunding, it doesn't matter. It's online. People are going to value your company and what you're doing and the team behind it in a much different way. And this is true of women-owned businesses as well. Statistics have shown that women-owned businesses do phenomenally well in crowdfunding because they can present in a much different way, and investors are really taking the time to do due diligence and learn about them. So it's been an uptick for minority-owned and women-owned businesses. So that's great to see with businesses like that getting started and more diversity in the entrepreneurship world.
Okay, so let's say that I'm a candidate for crowdfunding. What do I do? Which professionals, do I need to engage with? Who do I call first? I want to start a crowdfunding campaign. What's my first step? What's my first phone call?
For me personally, one of the things that I've seen, I've probably talked to about 150 companies that want to crowdfund. The first question I always ask them is, what research have you done on crowdfunding? And part of the reason why is a lot of these companies don't research at all. They hear the buzzword crowdfunding and say, hey, that's for me, and they show up ready to go. Beyond that, then it's what type of crowdfunding do you want to do? And so I get young people who come to me and say, I want to do reward-style crowdfunding. I don't want to give away any equity. On up to, I just had a really sophisticated group of business owners. It was a husband and wife team and a couple partners, and they're really going to go into that investment crowdfunding route. They're sophisticated. They understand what giving up equity in their company means. They've been CEOs of companies before. So they came to me because I'm a lawyer, and that should be one of your first stops. Asking a lawyer, what are the legal ramifications of what I'm doing? How do I actually set this up in a legal way where I'm complying with regulation, I'm protected, my investors are protected? And when I talk about entrepreneurs being protected, IP attorneys, tax attorneys, there's a lot of questions out there that people, I put my product online, what does that mean for my intellectual property rights? If I haven't gotten any patents or haven't done any, IP work, what does that mean? The other big thing is working with an accountant, putting together sound financials based on what you're doing, good financial projections. One of the things I often see in businesses, when they're raising money, they're all projecting that they're going to be this hockey stick growth. Year two, we're going to be multimillionaires, and every investor is going to make a ton of money on this. How could it go wrong? And that's almost never the case in business. So sitting down with an accountant who knows, or someone that's a financial professional and knows how to put together good numbers is really, really key. The other thing for investors of this, the side that often gets left out of the equation here is investors. And talk to one of your investment advisors. Talk to somebody that knows how to do due diligence. Because I've actually met with a couple of people who invested in startup companies via crowdfunding, and they really had no idea what they were investing in. They didn't understand what their investment meant or what it was, and they've lost money on the deal. And now they're pretty upset. And they, in a couple of the situations, they said, I had a really bad gut feeling about it, but I made the investment anyways. And I always say, if you have a bad gut feeling, you should probably ask somebody else. Because generally your gut feeling turns out being right. Now, sometimes you could be wrong. So there's a lot of different, you want to use accountants, you want to use attorneys, all the professionals that are in the financial world to give you good expertise. One of the funny things, I was just talking to a guy who does M&A yesterday, and he's really on the side where companies are selling themselves. And he was talking about crowdfunding for these later stage companies. And part of what you have to think about when you do this is, how does this affect your succession plan? How does this affect your, if you're going to sell your company down the road, your exit strategy, what does this mean for you? Do you know? So if you're a 65-year-old starting a business and you want to retire by the age of 70 and this business is a complete and total failure, what does that do to your retirement pie? Whereas if you're 35, you can maybe be a little bit more risky. So there's a whole host of professionals you want to talk to. And it's not right for everybody, Tom. I'm going to be honest with you. Most of the people I meet with, I try not to encourage them too much. I don't discourage anyone. Because I've seen companies that I thought were really poorly put together and really weren't in a good position improve and get to where they needed to be. But in a lot of cases, especially when you're talking about investment crowdfunding, it's not right for the company, or they've got to do some work to get to the point where it is right.
So there's downsides, obviously. What risks should an entrepreneur be aware of, and can these risks be mitigated?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly risk involved anytime you're raising money. One of the big things, crowdfunding at its nature, at its core, is a very public thing. And it's something that you're going to be going out and putting your face out there and your company out there. And one of the things that we've always discussed in Michigan is, what if a company, let's say you're in Kalamazoo, Michigan, it's a city of like 100,000 people, probably a little bit less than that. And most people in Kalamazoo, they're business owners, people know who they are. And you go out and do a crowdfunding campaign and half your investors come from your local area. They're people who if you've got kids, their kids go to school with you. You're going to see them at the soccer game or the football game on Friday night. And you go out and take investment from them and the company fails. That's one of the big risks. How are you going to treat that situation? Are you going to be honest up front? Are you going to be transparent? Certainly the intellectual property risk is one that I always kind of key into. A lot of times in crowdfunding, you're dealing with a novel idea or a brand new product. And it's something that's really different. And I actually just met with someone 2 days ago, they'd come up with an agricultural technology. They put it out there, and it turns out, I'm not going to mention which company it was, but it's a big one, took their idea, saw it, and stole it, and made it, better, because they're a big company with tons of resources. And so they're now competing against this company selling the exact same product they have, but better. And turns out they didn't have any intellectual property protection at all. And so their idea was completely stolen. They're probably going to lose in that market, and they've got other product lines. But it's really tough for them because they didn't protect themselves. Now, certainly, when I look at the risks, it's also for the investors. Investors sometimes make poor choices. They get excited about something, and they, oh, this is the hot new technology. And I'll give an example. I put on investor webinars from time to time, and I had three companies that were in the exact same industry. They were competitive companies. All three of them had pros and cons. Only one of those three is probably going to make it, you know, because they're competing with each other. And maybe two of the three stay in business, but one of them is probably going to go out of business, one's going to be successful, and one's going to maybe sustain itself. So there are going to be investors who pick the wrong horse in that race. And so, you know, if you're an investor, the great thing about crowdfunding is you mitigate your risk by spreading your investment. You make smaller investments, spread it around different companies, so you're not putting some huge lump sum of money into things. If you're an entrepreneur, though, going back to those professionals, that's how you mitigate the risk. Talking to professionals, making sure that everything you do is honest and transparent. Honesty and transparency is 90% of the game when you're talking about this. The 10% is, you know, they're looking at your team. They're looking at who you are as a person. Are you authentic? Do you believe in this idea? And they want to know everything about you. And investors aren't going to invest in you if they think you're hiding something. So that's a big way, is just have the kimono open, so to speak. That's an older business term, but it still holds true today.
So you're an attorney, you're an entrepreneur, and it seems like you had this idea for Campus Starter. What exactly is Campus Starter?
That's a great question. So Campus Starter is an idea I've had for a while. Part of what I do in my spare time is speak at college and universities and go out to these different schools, and always, it's generally in the College of Engineering or the College of Business. They've got some entrepreneurship group, and they bring me in and say, hey, talk to these young students about crowdfunding. And we had a tragic story. I'm not going to say the kid's name, but it was at a university there in the Northeast. He was a Princeton University student, and he had a fantastic business idea. And he went out on Kickstarter and was not successful. And then he went back to a different crowdfunding site, I think it was Indiegogo, and wasn't successful again. And he called me and said, hey, I just want some advice. We weren't successful. And I said, well, tell me what you did. Tell me how your campaign worked, what you did to put this together. And he left out a significant thing, which is he didn't really tap into the Princeton Alumni Network. He didn't use the Princeton name at all. And Princeton obviously is a very prestigious school. They've got a great alumni network. They're very well known, probably worldwide. If you say Princeton, people are going to know what you're talking about. And I use that story to illustrate the fact that these young entrepreneurs at universities have a great network to tap into. They've got their alumni of their school. They've got the community that's supporting their school. They've got the other students that are there, and they can tap into that. So Campus Starter was built on that story and saying, let's give these students a way to use the fact that they're part of this university community to highlight the community and really build that into part of their story and use the tribe that is common. I went to a small school called Kalamazoo College. There's a tribe of us. If you see somebody in a Kalamazoo College shirt, regardless of where you are in the world, you stop and have a conversation with you, and you're talking about the same thing. They know. I mean, I've talked to 90-year-olds who lived in the same dormitory I lived in. Obviously, it's been updated since then, I believe. But, you know, we have very common experiences. So what we do is we go to a school, we give them for free a white-labeled page with their branding, their school logo, that's just for their student entrepreneurs. And so their student entrepreneurs can really highlight themselves. On the other side of this coin, the professors who put their time and energy into these projects, and often are doing so, they don't get any equity in these companies. They spend all this time, they're getting paid, you know, the typical salary of an academic professor, which isn't, you know, certainly not $1 million a year salary, and they're putting all this money and energy into these projects. They want to get some recognition. The school wants recognition because it helps the school build their relations with their alumni. It also helps the school attract new students. You know, let's take Michigan as an example. If you graduate high school and you're picking between Central Michigan and Western Michigan, and you're a student who's entrepreneurial, and Central says, hey, we've got this great entrepreneurship program, we've got Campus Starter, four real companies started out of our program last year, and here are the four companies. Go look at their website, and Western can't say that. You're going to go to Central because, you know, if you're comparing the two, that's a better experience for you. And so we're sort of relying on the two sides of the coin. And so far we've been relatively successful. We've gotten a great response. We've gotten a number of schools to commit, and we're in the process of building towards an actual hard launch where we put it out there to the general public. Right now we're gathering a beta cohort of schools to test it out and tell us what's good and what's bad and let their students use it and see what works.
That seems to be one of the better ideas I've heard all day. It just seems to be in the right place at the right time. Well, Thomas, we're coming up on that magical time where we're going to call it a day. This was definitely, for me, one of the more interesting coffee in the cloud sessions that we've had in a very long time. I can't seem to turn the news on without hearing or seeing something about crowdfunding, and it's certainly in vogue. The entrepreneur community seems like has been waiting for this legislation to finally, you know, come to where we are right now. So it seems like you're going to be a busy guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I am very busy. Yes.
Well,
in a good way.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time today. And this is Tom Capone, Executive Director of the NYDLA. Thank you, and have a great day.